as a special counsel work session. Do we need a roll?
Yes.
Okay.
Councilmember McGarvey?
Here.
Councilmember Tran? Councilmember Klonowski? Mayor Winston? Mayor Pro Tem Lee?
Here.
Okay. Councilmember Erickson?
Here.
Councilmember Morrison?
Present.
Mayor Pro Tem Lee, you have quorum.
Great. Thank you. All right. Let's go to discussion.
Just reading over. Did you find a space?
Okay.
Sorry.
No.
Oh, what's going on? Did you get in a fight?
I joined Devin.
Jim, you did you're something across Jim?
Because of the mediations. They're supposed to be.
I know.
I'm watching them out.
If you grow the mustache longer, it will just cover up the teeth.
It's now in a whisper. Next thing's here, things to do
about it. Yeah. 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 Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's the worst spot to make me chat.
Good evening, Mr. Mayor. I use council members. Jeff,
you can say Mayor Pro Tem.
Jeff Olsen, City Transportation Engineer. Tonight we're here to talk about the Highway 252, I-94 Environmental Impact Statement, EIS. As you know, we've been working with MnDOT, Hennepin County, the cities of Minneapolis, Brooklyn Center, and some other agencies on this project for quite some time. Tonight we have some representatives here from MnDOT. We have the project manager from MnDOT, Blanchard, and we have from our consultant team, HDR Engineering, we have the project manager from HDR, Brandy Copenhagen, and the community engagement coordinator, Marcel Walker. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to Amber and Brandy.
Sounds good. You want me to
come
up there?
Yeah.
All right.
Please.
Sounds good. All right. Good evening, council members. Thanks for having us. My name is Amber Blanchard. Again, I'm the project manager for the 252-94 EIS study. And I am also the major projects manager at MnDOT in the Metro District. So thanks for having us. I'm going to go through some slides. Ryan Wilson is not here today. He's got not a lot of staff right now, so he's down a few. So he's here in spirit. But I'm going to go through some slides, and then Brandy's going to take over, and then I'll finish up. So, here to get started. There we go. Here's our conversation today. We're going to kind of ask why we're here, do a little project overview, talk through. Brandy's going to run through the over-under evaluation, the outreach, and the recommendations, and then I'm going to go through next steps. So why are we here? So we're really here today to give you an overview of our Policy Advisory Committee meeting that's going to take place next Monday from 1 to 3 p.m. That is online. We want to give you this preview because there's some important decisions that we made that we want to run by you. And so wanted to make sure that you saw this information before we get to the PAC meeting. There is a lot of data, and it's very data heavy. So first, I'm going to give you a project overview. Here is our EIS process. This EIS process started actually quite a while ago with our purpose and need, our scoping phase. We are currently in the draft EIS phase. We are in phase 1A, which is the decision on over or under Highway 252. Essentially, what we're asking is, should we put Highway 252 over the local roadways or under the local roadways at the intersections? Doesn't mean we have decided where access is going to go yet. That actually is the next phase, phase 1B. All the decisions that go into the phase 1A over under recommendation will go forward into phase 1B. And then all the decisions from phase 1B, which is our access, will move forward into phase 2, which is 94 and 252 mainline choices. And then once that is done, we're hoping we'll reach a preferred alternative and then get that selected alternative, get the final EIS out, and the record of decision as well, which is that federal action on the environmental review process. So we're here today to show you what over-under looks like. So we've got some visualizations that we're showing here. The one on the left, and I know the screen, that one's not too bad. The screen on the left will show you kind of what it looks like today. There are several driveways around near the intersection of Highway 252, and you see on the right side what it looks like if Highway 252 would go over local roadways. So those driveways remain. You do see some retaining walls and a bridge in the background, but not a lot of impacts at all to the visual on this option. And by the way, these are representative, so they're just examples to kind of show you the difference between renderings, not actually true renderings of individual intersections just yet. So here is, again, on the left, kind of what it looks like today, except for on the right, this is what the under would look like. So this is 252 under the local roadway. The local roadway, you see the driveway difference. There are driveways on the left in the current configuration, but on the right, those driveways, the grades are different, right? And so those driveways no longer exist. And that would result in property takings because those driveways are inaccessible. So
excuse
we evaluate.
Me, I have a question.
Yeah, please do.
Can you say that result in what was that? Did you say?
These would result in property takings because there's no access to those driveways.
Okay, thanks.
You bet. So what did we evaluate? We evaluated a number of evaluation criteria here. These are impacts that we're taking a look at. So these impacts include property impacts to environmental justice areas and non-environmental justice areas, community facilities. So that is like churches, dental clinics, medical clinics, those places where people tend to gather. Traffic noise is another impact, and you'll see a little bit later on how critical that plays a role, especially with looking at property impacts as well. We also looked at Section 4F resources, so that's parkland, recreational land. We looked at historic properties, and to my knowledge, there's only one, the Brooklyn Center Water Tower, but that doesn't come into play here in Brooklyn Park. Stormwater management is another thing we looked at. Aquatic resources or wetlands, biological resources. So in specificity, we looked at just the rusty patch bumblebee as those maps had changed recently. And so we wanted to verify the impact there. And then we looked at the 100-year floodplain as well as the Mississippi River bluff impact and river shore impact zones. And then we also added another one at the request of Brooklyn Center, and that is property tax impacts as well. So we put a dollar figure on that. One of the things, so I've been working on this project now for a year, and one of the things I heard a lot about is how important public health inequity is to many of the communities out here. And so one of the things that I got to work on right away is looking at the equity health priorities from the equity health assessment that was done, specifically report number 3 that was done a few years ago. And these are commitments that MnDOT has committed to, especially with the EHA priorities, and are in direct relation to those EHA priorities. So the first thing that we're committing to is, and you'll see this in every category, so there's 3 categories: community livability, roadway safety, and transportation equity. In each of those 3 categories, we are asking the same question at specific decision points, and that same question is, does this issue or priority achieve or address the intent? That is the first question. If the answer is yes, then we keep moving forward. If the answer is no, there is a reason why, and we need to document and explain that. So you'll see that in every single decision point that we make. Actually, Randy will talk about it for phase 1A here shortly. But I want to emphasize that because that's a really important thing. We want to make sure that we're coming in from different lenses when it comes to the decisions that we're making. Then there's other things like assess and disclose projected traffic volumes, traffic time, travel times, and patterns on local roadways. Those items are basically what we would do anyway for this type of analysis. And so, but that is directly related to some of the issues that came up with traffic noise and traffic volume. So we will be looking at that. One of the things I want to point out is we will be facilitating discussions with communities to brainstorm ideas on public health inequity. That is something that we did not commit to with the final scoping decision document that is really important to us so that we can learn from the community and try and make sure that we are accommodating some of their ideas into this process too. Because they know, you all know your community better. Brooklyn Center knows the community better than I do, and so on and so forth, Minneapolis as well. And then there are some other things here. I'm not going to read them all, but these are really what's really important to us. The other one that I want to move your attention to is the last one for transportation equity. That is, evaluate and disclose transportation benefits and burdens. That's really important. That is something I wanted to do before I even knew about the equity health assessment, because that is something that's really important to do on a map so that people can see what impacts and what benefits there are to each population that uses the system. So that will be done as well in this process. And the last thing I'll mention, this is a living thing, which means as things come up, we will make changes to this and hopefully add more commitments as well. So Brandy's going to come up and she's going to do the phase 1A analysis.
Okay. So the issue category described here on the left side, that was brought up in the earlier slide about what did we look at. So you'll see the same list right here, the environmental, justice, and non-EJ property impacts, property tax impacts, community facilities, traffic noise, Section 4 of resources, historic properties, stormwater management, aquatic resources, and so on. You can read the rest. But we wanted to really point out what the differences are and what, just to make sure it's clear, we are looking at over or under at every place where we could potentially have an interchange. So that affects three of your roadways. And over or under could be determined at each individual intersection alone. So they don't have to necessarily be all in one decision, over for every or under for every intersection, because they're far enough apart in our access combinations where we can make the grades work. So we're really looking at over or under at each individual intersection. So let's focus on that part of it. And what we're trying to do is color code the differences that we're seeing in these to sort of draw your eye to what the real differences are. So this greenish color right here, and we're really showing there's really not much of a difference, and this explains, you know, why and what sort of measures we looked at. So we can, you know, always go back and look at what these are and why we colored the code them green. Sometimes there's just a slight difference, and it really doesn't help us make this decision. Moderate, we kind of stepped it up to sometimes, like if we have more half an acre difference in property impacts or more than one relocation, in tax impacts more than $10,000. We, you know, this went into the moderate category, which is more of a yellow here. And then orange is really a substantial difference. So if we doubled that number, so if, for instance, if we had, let's say we show three relocations in one case, but there's six in the other, that's a substantial difference between those two things. So when we double something, that's where we've indicated that there's quite a bit of difference here, and we're trying to really draw your attention to that. So I won't go through this, but if you looked at every single intersection that we looked at, specifically for your city, 85th, Brookdale, and 73rd, this is how we color-coded it. We really want to draw your attention to the oranges and the yellows, and this is sort of what led us to our decisions. But I'm going to go through every intersection individually so that we can look at it individually, not in a big graphic like that.
I'm going to stop here real quick.
Sure.
Just a pause. Councilor Tran is online. So do we need to bring her up on the screen?
Yeah.
Yes.
Sorry. Yeah.
up here.
I think just if there's any questions, once it's time for questions.
You need to be able to see her during the conversation.
Yes, because so she does count for a quorum.
Yeah.
Your attendance. Councilmember Trant, if you could come on camera. Thank you. Great.
Then we can't see the presentation.
We'll do this.
Yeah.
Smaller.
Maybe smaller than her.
Yeah, okay. You can actually spotlight her.
About the outreach. So we presented all of this information in a number of different ways. So I'll describe them right here. So we have four types of events that we did, but we had multiple events within each type of event. The first thing we did is we reached out to in-person property owners. Like, we wanted to directly talk to those folks who have a potential direct impact to their property, meaning there's an acquisition that might happen if we decide to go over or under. So we had, we reached about 65 people when we had those meetings, and we actually did each intersection location at separate meetings. Then we followed that up with in-person workshops. We had two of those, one for each city. We had 896 people attend those, and I should have mentioned we also, for the property owners, we had 30 comments from them. And then for the workshops, we had 58 comments received. We followed that up with virtual engagement, where people could go online at their will and watch a bunch of recordings of all these different intersections. You could specifically, you know, look at your intersection and only see that. We had quite a bit, as you can see, people view those and watch those recordings. We received another 49 comments from that. And then we had a couple of pop-up events at various locations, the Blue Line event, which was here, the Brooklyn Center Farmers Market. We did get some more feedback from that, 27 attendees, total of 13. So you can see our outreach was around 1,400 people with 150 comments. And this is, you know, the kind of, when we ask people, really specifically ask, what do you prefer, over or under? Or in many cases, we received no opinion. So we counted those as well. But you can see here some of the differences. For instance, at the property owner meetings, again, this is specifically people who are affected by this directly. You know, everyone did offer an opinion of over, or there was simply no opinion. The August workshops, it became, no opinion became the more, more what we got. This was open to anybody who wanted to come. The September online survey, you can see people voted for under, that was the primary votes, and then the pop-ups, over. So it's really a mix. But then when you look at each individual intersection, this is how it draws out. At 85th, under was preferred. At Brookdale, no opinion, blank was preferred. And at 73rd, there was a tie between for under. So this is our recommendations. And we'll start with 85th, the north end of the corridor. So again, bringing up just at 85th, your eye comes to you know, this orange here versus this lighter color here, that's biological resources. But you'll notice there's not that big of a difference, but it's still met that category of more than an acre. But you'll notice what we're seeing here, let me go back, it's often coming down to traffic noise or property impacts is what we're seeing if the differences are. But in 85th, there's one nuance. We really don't have a big difference in actual properties, but you will see that at the other intersections. But that traffic impact, you can see that this color here of orange, there's a lot more people that are affected in the Highway 252 over decision versus Highway 252 under. Now, I want to make it very clear that we did not look at, and I'm just going to move this over here just so you can see this. This is, you know, the dots are if you are up in the 66 decibel range. And that range is described to you here. It's in between a vacuum cleaner and normal speech. And that's the number that we use when we determine whether we have a noise impact. But I want to make it very clear, we did not look at noise walls. So this does not include a mitigation that we often do almost every time for highways. And there was a reason for that. Since there's so many variables and this design is still a work in progress, we really can't tell a property owner for sure that the noise is going to change that 66 decibels to a certain decibel underneath it. We really won't know that until we've selected a preferred alternative, have a pretty detailed design on this. So we just didn't want people to think, oh, the noise wall is going to fix it. For me, I'm property owner someone, that's right there right now. We just can't say that for sure right now. So that's sort of the conundrum we're in when we describe this information. So noise was looked at, but mitigation was not.
Can I ask a question?
Yes.
There's a fire station just to the west of that intersection.
Yeah.
Any specific impacts related to that station?
So that is right in this next slide.
Oh, okay.
So,
what a segue.
So you will notice that, you know, there are more noise impacts on Ober. There's really the biological resource. Really, you know, it's a low potential for the rusty patch bumblebee, so it's not really driving this decision, but we still wanted to point out that it is there. But we did have a lot of conversation with your staff about that fire station. It really wasn't part of our criteria about grades that would be reasonable for a fire, you know, but for actual trucks. We used a maximum of 5% grades, after further and more consideration about this, we decided we are recommending the Highway 252 go over because it's a flatter, as you saw, we're not elevating the highway at all, or the highway, the roadway at all at 85th, it's staying where it's at, so their operations aren't really affected, related as it's related to grades. But we know we can mitigate noise. We just don't know by how much yet. And when we look at where those noise impacts are, I think there's a strong chance that we're going to get a noise wall to work in there. It's just exactly who's affected by that, we can't say right now. So that's 85th, and now we'll go to Brookdale. So this is where we see more of the property impacts versus the noise impacts issue that we've got out here. Again, this is four areas of property impacts over here that are showing up. Three of them are orange, so we're saying there's a pretty substantial difference than the other option versus noise. So noise is on the other end of the equation. So Highway 252, again, there are more receptors that are affected, but there are more properties affected in the other option. And the graphic here kind of shows you what that is. So when you look at the Ober, we have one property here in the corner where there's a potential relocations. But when we do honors, because of all these driveways are severed, we can't get people back to their driveways, so that property becomes inaccessible, including, is this one the case? There is a, no, this one does not have a church in this case, but there are properties over here. There's more property being affected. That's what the yellow means. We just have to take more land in those cases. But again, here's the noise. There's quite a few more noise impacts over in the opposite case, which is Highway 252 over. But again, they're very dense in where you put noise walls. You really want more homes to be affected when you put a noise wall in, so I think there's a strong potential that we can mitigate that noise issue. So for Brookdale Drive, we are again recommending Highway 252 over, recognizing that there is a trade-off for noise. But we do believe there's a strong way we can potentially mitigate that noise. Exactly how much, we won't know until we have a very good understanding of the design. But this does reduce the number of relocations, as well as even, you know, taxes. We did look at property taxes too. Just to note, we only looked at what would the property tax loss be for the year that was reported in 2023 for a relocation. That's all we looked at. We did not look at minor takes of a property. And then 73rd Avenue, we have a very similar outcome, but you can see here when it comes to relocations, we have quite a few more if we were to do Highway 252 under. But again, we have quite a bit more of the noise impacts in the other category. This is what it looks like. These are the actual folks that would be affected. In the case of 73rd, I knew there was a church. This church is relocated if we were to do Highway 252 under. So, we wanted to specify that's an issue too. You know, it's even outside of just normal other relocations. But it also, you know, we have these apartment buildings, just quite a few more folks that are impacted related to the under condition. Again, the trade-off, as mentioned before, is there are more noise impacts. I will say, if there were an interchange here, now this is only if there's an interchange here, it's a different story if there's not. But some of these noise impacts, this one specifically, it's affected and this thing would be gone anyway in either case, this apartment building. So even though we're counting them, they may not be there if we were to actually build an interchange here. So again, the same recommendation is we recommend Highway 252 over 73rd. Again, we're really reducing the number of relocations here. There is somewhat of a difference in property tax impacts, but it doesn't rise to the level of doubling it. As again, the trade-off is more noise. But again, this is a pretty dense area where I think noise walls will be pretty effective. We just don't know exactly how much. So another thing that our analysis did indicate is noise is currently an issue. So if you study those maps some more, you're going to see that noise already is an issue out here. We'll be looking at noise walls here regardless. We can, you know, MnDOT is known for building noise walls. We find a way to make them work. But it will, you know, really be important that we work with the community, especially apartment buildings. Sometimes we really have to work to get them to vote because the property owner has a certain percentage of that vote versus the actual people who are renting in those. So it's really important that we work on that. So we would definitely need your help on promoting getting a noise wall in if we get to that point. So then how does this relate to our project objectives? These are, we show these at every PAC meeting. And so we're trying to point out here where we think we've met these project objectives or maybe we're not doing so well. In almost every category, we meet them except for environmental, where the noise impacts are not minimized as a result of this over versus under decision. But in all the other ones, you know, we are minimizing the need to acquire additional property. That was its own objective, so we want to point that out. We are minimizing EJ property impacts, environmental justice property impacts in every case. We didn't look at injuries or fatalities because it doesn't really change. We didn't look at safety. Since we're meeting standards, we're not seeing a need to look at that. We didn't look at transit in this analysis either. But we're also working with your community. Like we did talk to the fire station chief, or the fire chief, and you know, he did provide his input as to whether we're being consistent with the needs of that. So that was part of our decision making. How do I do this? And then this goes back to what Amber was talking about, over or under versus the health equity priorities. We didn't, not, it wasn't applicable for all of these priorities like safety, personal safety, transportation equity, but some of them it is. You know, we did minimize potential noise impacts in one location. It's not in Brooklyn Park, although we don't minimize it at Brookdale 73rd or 70th, or I should say for you guys, or 85th. We minimize potential impervious services in the area that it is consistent with that, but we don't minimize potential increase at 66. So we did go back and really, you know, how did we answer this question like Amber has explained? And we did try to explain, you know, there are trade-offs to some of these. You may affect one positively, and it's the trade-off as you affect another, the opposite. And we do minimize potential EJ property relocations related to transportation equity, so achieve that. Every time I do this, I get the wrong way.
All right, last couple of slides. Before I do that, though, there's a couple of points that I want to make that you all will be interested in. West River Road, we know that is an issue that will be looked at in Phase 1B, so our next phase of decision-making. And then Humboldt will also be looked at in a future phase, likely Phase 2 as well. And then, as you can see, Brady's team did a little bit higher level of analysis for this type of decision because we really need to understand the vertical component of the interchanges before we get into the next phase of access. So wanted to make those couple of clarifications. So we are at the point now, here at the end of October, where we are completing our phase 1A analysis piece, and then once we get done with the PAC meeting next Monday, we will be on to phase 1B and looking at access combinations. And some of that work has already been started by Brandy's team just to get a jump on it and get going. That work will go into the spring. That is very data heavy. You thought this was a lot, that's going to be even more. So just a fair warning, but we need time to get that data and get it ready for all of you and start discussing it. So
I think you gotta touch it and then press enter.
There we go. Okay. This slide basically depicts the access combinations that we will be looking at in phase 1B. For access on Highway 252. This slide is not new. This came from the final scoping decision document, so just wanted to kind of reiterate there are five combinations as well as a no-build combination, which is on the far left, that we will be taking a look at and comparing between all five, all six, I should say, with the no-build. So our EIS is going to take a little while. We're in phase 1A right now, about to enter phase 1B. That will be a long process. Hopefully we'll be done next spring with that. And then we'll get into phase 2 where we talk about mainline alternatives, and that will take us for sure through this time next year. And that's all I have. So I'll stand for questions from all of you if you have any.
Great, thank you. Councilmember Morrison.
Thank you. Thank you guys for your lengthy presentation. I don't know how you thought we were supposed to retain all that. Is there a reason that we didn't get no slides with that?
Actually,
yeah, it was right there, the yellow.
Oh, okay, I'm sorry.
No worries.
So, a couple of things. I see that you compared the noise with the vacuum cleaner. And what else was that other?
And regular speech level.
Yeah, speech and vacuum cleaner. So is that what we're trying to say was out there now? We compare the noise level to a vacuum cleaner or just regular conversation?
That was our analysis. Doesn't necessarily mean the noise level is currently at that, but that is what our analysis showed.
If you look at the slides, maybe point out where the green is, that there is some cases where the noise is that way today.
Oh, so, there it is.
So yeah, the green in there, this green, that's where that 60, it's above 66 decibels today. It's either at or above 66, that's what the green is. So people that are within this green are at or above. People that are in the orange would be if we built the interchange there, either over versus under. So that does spread out a little more. So that noise spreads out more. Plus we're using, there's a lot more traffic that we're modeling in the future condition. Whereas this is today's noise levels. So 66 decibels is in between the vacuum cleaner and the normal speech, right between there. But that is the number that we use around the country of what's considered, or at least I know for sure in Minnesota, of what's considered we're having a noise impact.
That, to me, that just seemed like that's totally, to me, it just seemed like that's just, don't seem like that's a comparison to the noise level of a vacuum cleaner and somebody talking, but you say that's what you compare it to, but I just don't see that. Also, you spoke about the wall. You haven't discussed about putting a wall up there to break some of the sound barrier. And then another big question I have is, the way we read these drawings now, for me, it would have been helpful if you could have showed us the elevation of the over and under, so we could have visually seen it, as opposed to just seeing everything flat, the way you have it there. And then when you show the comparison for one with driveways to the left and one with the overpass to the right of that, I'm trying to see how would that overpass.
Well, we tried to give you an idea of what that looked like in slide number. Right here. So this is where we, driveways are. See all these driveways over here?
Yeah, I see that. I understand that right there. Mm-hmm. But go to the one before that.
Okay.
Now the very poor picture back there, to me, is a bridge that's over.
Right.
And how would you make that work on 252 when that runs north and south of that bridge? How would you make that work?
This is 252 on top.
Yeah. Oh, that's 252.
Yeah. You're looking east in that view?
Yes.
Oh, because I was trying to figure out how that worked. But,
the reason why 252 doesn't have any direct driveways, so it's much easier to elevate it from that perspective, so we're not changing the grade where driveways are, so that's why you don't see as many driveways. In fact, that's just 252 that's elevated.
And then, important thing, you spoke about taking property. So how does that conversation work about taking property? Because I don't think that was the right word, but how does that play into part with those homeowners or residents that be one of those properties that you may be trying to take? How are they impacted negatively and or positively? Do we have a set offering or standard, basic, whatever you guys use to consume, to take that property?
Yeah, we use fair market value. And at this stage, these are potential property impacts because we have not fine-tuned where the actual impacts will be. So here you could see, that's a bad example. At Brookdale here, you can see there are property impacts that are identified in kind of the orangish color, reddish-orangish color, on the under versus the over. And once we get every phase we go into, we further refine the design. So at this point, we did meet with potential property owners that would be impacted, specifically those that you see colored. We will use fair market value, but we won't be able to start that process until after this environmental process is done. So we will meet with them. We go through a very rigorous process if they are impacted. And my goal as project managers is to avoid as many of those impacts as we possibly can. And in the next phase, we'll see what we can do to do that.
And my biggest concern is number one, safety. So I didn't hear you guys address safety right now as opposed to 252, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 years from now. I had this conversation before, and I'm serious about that because since that conversation died on 252 again, then there's another accident on 252 again. I don't want to risk another person or passerby to be subjected to unsafe conditions on 252 that we're not really addressing today. I understand you're talking about 4, 5, or 6 years, but I'm concerned about today. And anybody that's in Brooklyn Park, there's pedestrians and or passerby through our city. So how do we make that safe for the two or all elements, dog, walkers, whatever you want to call it, bike, travelers? How do we make that safe right now?
Yeah, thanks for the comment. I totally agree with you. We need to do that right now and in the future. So safety is something that we're going to be looking at in the next phases. And hopefully our alternatives that we have will show you the data so that we can address that head on.
You're going to show me the data of
how much safer it's going to be. So we have evaluation criteria in phase 1B for the access, as well as mainline that we're going to show you.
So we don't have it in this phase to show us
Right. This is more just that vertical component that we're trying to understand. Now, keep in mind, there is not going to be interchanges at every single intersection that we're talking about today. There just isn't, because the access combinations don't show that. So there won't be that issue. But we do need to address safety. That is one of our needs on the project, and that is very important to myself as well. So
okay.
We will be addressing that.
And that's, again, my major priority of all these conversations. And lastly, you said you have meetings with a lot of just people from the public that was there. That's not impacted one way or the other. So I'm just trying to see how is that a good move, gesture, measure, but people who not even included in that is lending a voice to that. How does that work?
So can you rephrase the question again? Are you talking about those?
Did I hear you say that you had some meetings, ongoing public meetings, and then there was people from all over that was at these meetings who not impacted. So the people who's not impacted, they was at the public meeting lending their perspective to what's going on.
Right.
And I'm trying to figure out the more people that's impacted will have a better input to what's going on than people that don't even have no impact there at all.
Gotcha, now I understand. That's why you see here where we looked at kind of the various groups that we've talked to, because we were very specific and very intentional to get out to those property owners. We are very intentional to get out to the Brooklyn Center and Brooklyn Park communities. And then we know that there were some people that maybe didn't have their decision ready in August, so we did the online survey to make sure that we had another chance for people to look at things. And this is why we have this here, so that we can kind of digest all of the input that we received. So,
yeah, if I could jump in, I think it's not that, like, there are people who have no investment participating. I think everybody is like has like an impact in some way, shape, or form. Whether it's just being a resident of Brooklyn Park who's concerned about the changes, right?
Correct. Yeah. Yeah. There's varying reasons why people feel impacted. Yeah, or feel very emotional or want to be included in our process.
Yeah, I see someone wanted to share, and then we're going to move on to Councilmember Erickson afterwards.
Yeah, Amber, just to double down, I guess, or just to add on to what Amber is indicating there, all of our outreach was targeted to Brooklyn Park and Brooklyn Center residents. We did it in stages, specifically starting in July, meeting with those property owner meetings, or with the property owners and residents who were shown on the map in those red or orange hue documents. We started there first because we wanted those individuals to be first aware of what we were evaluating in this upcoming phase, or in this current phase that we're in. We then went out to the broader community in Brooklyn Park and Brooklyn Center with two separate meetings, and we reached over 196 or so people. And then to make ourselves available to the larger community as a whole, we had an online survey throughout the month of September, and then we wrapped that up with pop-up events in both Brooklyn Park and Brooklyn Center. So all of our outreach was targeted, and these were the various ways that they that we showed up in the community.
Great, thank you, as it should be. Councilmember Erickson?
Yeah, the analyses that are here, both the map graphics and the tables, are those data points largely similar regardless of how the lane configurations end up?
No, we looked at a kind of a worst case traffic scenario to either provide the worst footprint or the worst noise impact. So we specifically looked at the traffic to decide those things. For instance, we don't know that interchange is going to happen at every one of these locations, but we assumed that interchange was going there when we looked at the traffic effects there as well as the noise effect there. We also looked at the six-lane scenario, which would produce the most noise as well as the most traffic to the area. So we try to get the biggest footprint. That's why when Amber's talking about, this is going to change as we move, because we're going to narrow these things down where we are going to look at a four lane and a six lane and a six lane with a managed lane, and we're going to have different answers. Then we try to look at sort of a worst case.
Thank you.
Councilmember Perry.
Thank you, Mayor Pro Tem. You mentioned earlier a conversation with the police, and I'm just wondering if there's any data that shows the advantage of 252 going over as opposed to a covered area in a neighborhood that might lend to mischief. Does that make sense? Is it safer for you know,
it's
yeah, for safety for the neighborhood? People can't necessarily as easily access a covered area on a freeway compared to a city street where they might stay overnight or mischief, that makes sense.
You know, we haven't received any feedback of that sort, that, you know, one would be different. Kind of like either one provides a bridge, you know, that's just weird. What is the bridge covering? You know, so I don't know that the bridges are necessarily longer in one case or the other. It's just where are they placed? So we didn't receive any kind of feedback like that.
Well, no, what I'm asking is if in this whole world that you guys focus on in developing these types of scenarios, if there's data available, for how much safer it is to, because as long as, I mean, anybody can get under any bridge pretty much, but if it's in a neighborhood, it's pedestrian accessible by design, whereas if it's a freeway, it's not pedestrian accessible, and therefore easier to spot someone who shouldn't be under there for whatever extended period of time.
I mean, I think you're kind of talking about like a tunnel situation where our daylight is about the same no matter what. You know, we have talked about in whether or not we would ever present a tunnel-like situation, like, for instance, for a pedestrian tunnel. I think the consensus there we're hearing is it doesn't feel safe for people because, you know, you can get trapped under there. So those don't necessarily feel safe. But I think I don't see much of a difference between these two because it's daylighted pretty well. You can see pretty well on either side in either case, the openings there.
I'm just thinking about people someday camping out under there.
Okay. So whether they're either camping out on 252 or on your local road.
Bingo.
I see. And we did not look at that.
We think you need to have more conversation with the chief. If we're going with like all overs, then 252 will 252 be like elevated all along the way then?
It doesn't have to be.
Okay, so it would be.
But we use what freeway grades.
Yeah.
People don't notice those like you would on a normal street.
Okay.
So they're flatter by design.
Okay. Yeah, around that curve too. Okay, and then the noise walls would be like offset from the actual highway freeway structure, right? They would be closer to the homes, and then they would be elevated enough to be able to block the noise coming off the highway.
Maximum speed is 20 feet, I believe.
Okay. And then if we decide on a 4-lane highway versus a 6-lane highway, then that would like reduce like all of these estimations as well, right? That would be on the lower range of all of that. Okay. And then last thing is, a couple people have made a comment to me about the 85th pedestrian bridge, saying that they would be going from the bridge to having to cross intersections again underneath 252, and that they would prefer to have some sort of like bridge or passage. Now, if you're saying like a tunnel isn't safe, then is there other configurations to allow for free-flowing pedestrian, way without having to cross intersections, the ramps, at the ramps there?
Yeah, that's not something we've taken a look at right now, but definitely see if there's something that we can accommodate.
Yeah.
I can't guarantee, but I can take
that. Sure. That's my other point, because I agree, right? Right now, it's a nice ramp, goes over, right? And then they avoid having to cross any intersections, right? So then we would give them this new overpass that they'd have to go up again, like be crossing intersections. Although given less traffic, right? It would just be exit and entrance ramps, sure. They're not having to cross the actual highway anymore, but the point is noted, and I wanted to pass that on.
Thank you.
All right, anything else? Okay. All right. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you. So that is for this, or are we going to another one?
There's another VBA work session.
Right, okay. So we stay up here.
We
need to adjourn. All right, meeting is adjourned.
Thank you. So since you oversee major projects in all the metro, can we give you some additional